Joining PMP Network right now is a legendary film director, producer, a man who has worked with everybody in the business and has performed miracles. He's a guy that became known for producing low-budget films that grossed quite a bit of money, and he has also written books and done all kinds of things. In fact, his book is called How I Made 100 Movies in Hollywood and Never Lost a Dime. And now he's got a series running on the Sci-Fi Network called Black Scorpion, which is, it's a lot of fun. And Michelle Lentil is quite a lovely sight to look at, especially in her black scorpion outfit. And to talk about that and many more things, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Roger Corman. Hi, Roger.
Hello, Mark.
How you doing?
Very well.
Now, you did Black Scorpion 2, the movie, and now you've got the series running.
Yes, it happened in a rather strange way. Black Scorpion did very well in the United States, and in Europe it broke some records. And a German TV company called me. They wanted to make a German TV series of Black Scorpion, which was a little mind-boggling. Hmm. But I thought, if they're going to make it, I'll make it. So we made 22 episodes with Michelle Lentil, a former Miss Kansas, as Black Scorpion. And it's now on the Sci-Fi Channel. And to my great delight, it opened Friday nights, I think it's Friday night at 8 o'clock in January, and we're the number one rated show on the channel.
Yeah, we should mention that it's also on at 11 if you miss it at 8.
Right.
So that's a Sci-Fi Channel, which I enjoy watching, and Michelle is a beautiful young lady, and the co-star is a veteran of this program, Scott Valentine, who, of course, was on Family Times as Nick, and he played Steve Rafferty on the show. New partner of hers, and you know what I think is really amazing about Black Scorpion, though? It's I love that series. I also enjoy Dark Angel, and they're kind of similar in that they're kind of like a comic strip type of show.
Yes, that was the idea. I wanted to make a female Superman, Spider-Man, Batman, simply that.
Yeah, and you've succeeded, and it's a fun show, you know? It's enjoyable to watch. But one of the things I thought was great is all the great guests you've been able to secure on the show.
Yes, we have Adam West, who was the original Batman. We have the various super villains and super vixens that Black Scorpion must battle. Adam plays the Breathtaker, whose mission is to deprive the city of the angels of oxygen. What he doesn't know, of course, is there isn't much oxygen left in the city of the angels anyway, but that's his job. Plus, we've got Lou Ferrigno, Frank Gorshin, Soupy Sales. What is really great, we have 17 Playboy Playmates, including the Playmate of the Year, playing the Super Vixens.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I noticed that, and that's also a fun thing. It is eye candy, but not only for the men, but there's also some, I guess, women that the women can look at as well.
We've had a surprisingly positive response on the Sci-Fi Message board, or whatever it's called, and our own blackscorpion.net website from women. The demographics were really aimed at young men, but the fact that Black Scorpion is a woman who takes charge and solves her own problems and does not stand back in any way has gotten a very, very good response from women.
Yeah, actually, I think that some of the guest stars might appeal to the women, too, like people like Martin Cove and Dave Mustaine of Megadeth was on the show, and
right.
People like that. Personally, I thought Sherry Rose was pretty good.
Yeah, Sherry was excellent as Aftershock.
Yeah.
She can cause earthquakes.
Exactly. And Lisa Boyle as Medusa was excellent as well.
Yes, as a matter of fact, Lisa's on tonight
as
Medusa in, I think the show's called No Stone Unturned. Right. Her looks are so beautiful, and she really is that beautiful, she can turn men to stone.
Now, I want to talk a little bit about your background, because it's an amazing background. Now, you graduated from Beverly Hills High School and studied engineering at Stanford. What drove you from there to the movie business and the studios?
Well, my father was an engineer, and I went to Stanford intending to follow in his footsteps, and I found out that the film critics for the Stanford Daily got free passes to all the local movie theaters, so I wrote a couple of sample reviews, and they took me on as a film critic, and my life changed from there.
Hmm. So it was actually being a film critic that got you into the movie biz?
Right.
Wow, that's kind of an unusual turn.
In Europe, it's fairly common. François Truffaut, Godard, a number of particularly French directors started as critics. But in the United States, I think it's not so common.
No, actually, when it has happened, like Gene Siskel or someone trying to be a producer, usually their film has flopped miserably.
It's easier to criticize.
Yeah, much easier to criticize. What is it about some people that gets your attention from them? For instance, Jack Nicholson, when he approached you about The Trip, which you ended up producing, and I know he wrote it and things like that. What was it about Jack at that time that you thought, well, this guy, you know, has something on the ball here?
Well, when I started directing, I had no formal training as such, and with the engineering background, I felt I was able to learn the elements of the camera, the lenses, editing technique, and so forth fairly quickly, but I didn't know enough about acting, so I enrolled in an acting class, and I met Jack at that class, and he impressed me tremendously. He's a very dedicated, very intense actor, but who can also bring humor and humanity to the roles. So Jack and I worked together on, must be 10, 11, 12 films when we sort of started together, and he wrote several scripts for me, including, as you say, The Trip.
Mm. How about Francis Ford Coppola? He was you were one of the first people he worked with, right?
Yes, I had bought a Russian science fiction film, which was very good for the special effects, but was filled with anti-American propaganda. It was really outrageous.
Yeah.
And I was looking for somebody to edit it, so I called the UCLA Film School, and they recommended two of their top students. I interviewed them both, actually hired both of them, and then promoted Francis to my assistant, and then he became a production assistant, then an assistant director, and then he wrote and directed his first film, Dementia 13, for me.
Wow. I mean, it's amazing when you look at all the people that you've been involved with, and it's like a who's who in the movie business. And that's probably, aside from your films and all the things you've done, that probably will be the lasting legacy that you have in the business.
It may well be, because I'm happy and pleased with the films I've made myself, but I'm equally happy with the fact that actually the guys called it the Roger Corman Film School, and everybody got jackets, and they gave me a jacket that said Prexy on the front, and what our graduates of the film school have done.
That's funny. I remember one of your early films, Wild Angels,
yeah,
with Peter Fonda and Nancy Sinatra. Nancy was quite talented back then, and you would think that they would have used her for more different things. I remember her videos of these boots are made for walking. She obviously had some screen presence.
Yes, Nancy was very good. She was an excellent singer. She had two or three hit records, more than that,
yeah,
but at least two or three that went to number one, and she was a good actress, and I was a little surprised that her career didn't go farther.
I'm wondering if her father held it back rather than that, because he may not have wanted her to be a big star.
Or it may be there was some feeling about, you know, the daughter of the famous man. What you're saying is very possible.
Yeah, I always wondered about that, you know. You've had people working with you, as like Scorsese and Bogdanovich. Many of these folks have gone on to, and Ron Howard, another one, gone on to become huge in their own right in terms of filmmaking. What do you think they picked up from you?
Well, for all of them, I say they would have been successful if they had never met me. They simply are incredibly talented people. What they got from me maybe was a little grounding in the fundamentals and an opportunity.
Hmm. Now, do you still at this point use fresh faces?
Yes. Yeah. For instance, Michelle Lindell in Black Scorpion, she is a young graduate of University of California at San Diego and had only played a couple of supporting roles. And we were casting, and what I was looking for did not seem to me to be that difficult a thing to find in Hollywood. I wanted a beautiful young woman with a good figure who was fairly tall, because Black Scorpion beats up a lot of people, and didn't want a 5-foot-1-inch girl beating up all these bruisers.
Mm.
So I wanted a tall, good-looking woman with a good figure who was a reasonably decent actress. And I thought we would be inundated with them. We interviewed over 100 people. You've never seen so many beautiful girls who couldn't act. It was startling. And Michelle came in, and in the interview, in the reading, it was the beginning of a fight scene, and she got so carried away that she kicked the script out of the other actor's hands. And I thought, that's the woman we're looking for right there. So I think Michelle will go on.
Wow. You know, I was thinking of that role when I first saw your the film, and they sent me a screener of the TV series. And all I could think of was Julie Strain.
Yes.
I don't know if she ever tried out for that role.
Actually, Julie, at one time, I had set to do Black Scorpion. There was a problem with, it was a problem with the network we were working with at the time. So instead, I signed her, and she has played the lead in a picture we're about to send out called Battle Queen 2020, in which she plays a futuristic woman warrior, which is going to be coming out in a couple of months. I'm a great admirer of Julie. She's
great.
Yeah,
me too. We had her in studio here, and she's just a wonderful young lady, and knew what she wanted long ago and how to get it.
Yes.
And I kind of admire that.
She gave a great interview somewhere where, because, you know, she was a Penthouse pet or something
right,
like that, or pet of the year.
Yeah, 1983.
And somebody said, do you feel that they used you? And she said, I used them.
That's right. Yeah, that's true. Actually, it was 1993. She was the pet of the year.
Oh, yeah.
And we had her in studio, and she was she's very tall.
Yes, that was one of the. She's 6 feet tall.
Yeah, she was taller than I was, and I didn't like that. But you know, she looks great though.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting in terms of, you just mentioned that you're going to be releasing a new film. Now, are these films that you're releasing, are most of them going direct to video? Are they going in the theaters? What do you usually utilize?
They're going directly to video, almost all of them, which is a little bit of a disappointment to me. When I first started, everything I made went automatically to theaters. But over the years, the major studios have dominated theatrical distribution so heavily. First, it's tough for us on medium or low budgets to compete with a $50 million film, but also they'll spend $10 or $20 million advertising that film.
Right.
So of our, say, 20 pictures a year, no more than one or two go to theaters. The rest go to home video, and New Concord, our home video company, has been doing rather well. So I can't complain economically. It's just that I miss the sort of thrill of having the picture in the theater.
Well, you know, the same things happen in movie theaters that's happened in radio stations, consolidation. And there are so many huge chains that control most of the theaters, although there are still, in every city, one or two small independent theaters that run, you know, artsy films and independent films.
Yes.
And I would think that some of your films may be appropriate for those venues.
That's where we do play. As a matter of fact, I was partner in a theater circuit, a small theater circuit in Florida, which luckily we sold 2 years ago because the theater business has gone bad in the last year.
Mm.
And I've been thinking of starting up again with the idea of getting just one theater in each of 10 major cities, which would give me sort of a starting point for a national theatrical circuit, but on a very inexpensive basis.
Right. I know when you had New World Pictures, which eventually you sold and started Concord New Horizon. I know that at that point you had a pretty good distribution network. Have you thought about starting another distribution company in terms of promoting not only your stuff but other people's things too?
Well, New Concord is a distribution company. We just are not that active theatrically. We're primarily active in home video and in selling to cable and foreign. We're very strong in the foreign market.
Yeah.
So if I do go back more heavily in the theatrical distribution, I simply will expand New Concord.
So what is the limit you can spend on a movie that you know is going to go right directly to video?
We have a top of, and this becomes flexible, of somewhere between $3 and $4 million, and frankly, it's closer to $3 million.
Mm-hmm.
At around $3 million or a little bit better, if you make a really solid film, you can do well. Your primary markets are home video and cable in the United States, and the foreign markets. The foreign market has stayed much stronger for us than the domestic. So if we make films up to, say, $3.5 million or so, we feel we have a better than even, as a matter of fact, a very good chance of making money. If we go much above that, you've got to break into the theatrical market, and that puts us into a whole different game.
Now, in terms of movie reviews, I know the PMPnetwork.com, which you're on right now, has over 5 million listeners. And for some reason, we don't get your movies to screen and review. Most of the companies send it to us. Do you have a limited budget in terms of screeners and things? Or
is we have a limited budget, but I will change that as soon as we finish talking. The screeners will start going over there.
Yeah, because that's a good thing to do in terms of promotion. I think the Internet has become a huge promotional tool, and I know you're using it. You do a blackscorpion.net, and there's also a newconquer.com as well.
Yes.
There are a lot of great things on there, including some great photos of Michelle and some of the cast members, and also some streamers and advertisements of some of the movies that you're putting out.
Yes.
Now, in terms of some of the old stuff that you did, are you revisiting those at all in terms of the DVD market?
Yes. Now, that has been an extremely good experience for us. Just as when the home video market started, we were able to take films that we thought had used up most of their value and found a whole new market. We're finding the same thing with DVD. DVD is still smaller than home video, but it's growing very rapidly, and I've forgotten the projections. But the feeling is that within maybe 2 years, DVD will have surpassed home video. So we're taking some of our what we call our classics, like Death Race 2000 and Rock and Roll High School and so forth, mm-hmm. and we've reissued those on DVD and brought in the actors and the directors to do commentaries, and we've had some of the outtakes and so forth and built little assemblages around the DVD, and that's one of the most encouraging new markets for us.
That is, I think, the most fascinating thing for people like myself who are really into film and historians and people who really enjoy some of these movies like Rock and Roll High and some of the old stuff that's out there. This is the kind of thing that you get a behind-the-scenes look at what was going on when Rock and Roll High School was filmed and things like that. And that is, I think, in Eat My Dust and Big Bad Mama and all these different movies that you really enjoy, you get a chance for the second time to see them and also see them in a different light.
Yes.
And I think that's kind of the DVD market to me, with the creation of PlayStation 2 for the kids and all these different computer things where they can play that on there too, is really opened up that market to almost everybody.
Yes, it's been very fortunate for us.
Mm. Well, I want to wish you a lot of luck, Roger, and I know that luck will continue. It's not luck, it's skill. And,
well, it was a little luck and a little skill, a combination of both.
Yeah, well, you've done a great job in the past. I look forward to stuff in the future. Any chance of new episodes of Black Scorpion?
Yes. We're already talking with the Sci-Fi Channel. As I say, we came on the first Friday in January and immediately became their number one rated series, and we've continued so every week since. And we're already talking about a second year, which means I had 22 super villains and super vixens for this year, and I now have to come up. I'll repeat some of them. Adam West will probably be back as the Breathtaker. Lisa Boyle, who's on tonight as Medusa, undoubtedly will be back, and a number of others. But we're going to have to create new super villains and super vixens for next year.
Well, I got one right here. Mark Snyder, the radio wave. I can just
melt
the city with radio waves and destroy mankind.
It's a great idea, man. Mankind is doomed.
Roger, thanks so much for coming on, and continued success. And folks, don't forget, tonight, 8 o'clock and 11 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, it's the Sci-Fi Channel and Black Scorpion. Take care.
Very good. Thank you, Mark.
Bye-bye.